Welcome back to The Takeaway. I'm Melissa Harris-Perry. Call sign, MHP.
What the hell?
Good morning, aviators. This is your captain speaking.
For the second week in a row, Top Gun Maverick is flying high at the box office. The film has already grossed more than $500 million worldwide.
Everyone here is the best there is. Who the hell are they going to get to teach us?
Yes, after 36 years, Tom Cruise is back as the aptly named Maverick. Cocky, impulsive, and every bit as beach ready as he was in the 80s. How does he do that? No major spoilers here, but the new movie centers on Maverick's relationship with Rooster, played by Miles Teller. He's the son of Maverick's late partner, Goose, played by Anthony Edwards in the original. But there are modern elements too. Monica Barbaro plays Phoenix, the franchise's first woman pilot. Now, we wanted to find out how real the portrayal of her experience was. So we turned to Commander Becky Dowling Calder, the first woman pilot ever to graduate from the Navy's Strike Fighter Weapons School, better known as Top Gun. Commander Calder earned her aviator wings in 2000. She served in Operation Southern Watch, Enduring Freedom, and Iraqi Freedom. And she accumulated about 2,500 flight hours. She's part of an elite group of people with very particular skills. But flying fighter jets wasn't actually her first love.
I think I ended up there both flying and at the Naval Academy, in the Navy, and even in the reserves today because of my love for basketball, actually.
Basketball led you to being a pilot. How's that?
You know, it always comes back to basketball. I played basketball in high school and I wanted to play Division I, and the Naval Academy recruited me, and that's how I ended up at the Naval Academy. And it was a chance meeting on a basketball court with sort of a mentor of mine who told me I would make a kick-ass F-18 pilot.
It turns out you are kind of a kick-ass pilot. Like, whoever said that was absolutely right. Now, the Pentagon lifted its combat ban for women in aviation in 93, and that was just before you went off to the Naval Academy, right?
That is true. Yes. The combat exclusion law, or what was called the risk rule, was officially rescinded. And, you know, it's interesting because when I was told that that day on the basketball court, it was just a few years after that, and women really hadn't been flying in combat yet. So this, he was actually the deputy commandant of midshipmen. He saw something that I didn't even know really was possible. And, you know, it's a real testament to just the importance of both leadership and mentorship.
Tell us how you got to Top Gun.
Top Gun for Navy pilots happens after your first tour. So I did my first combat deployment after I joined my first squadron, and it was right after the war started. We left in 2002. So I got back from my deployment, and I had an experience on that deployment, which really led me to try to apply for Top Gun because of some things I experienced. So after my first deployment, I knew I wanted to be the best pilot I could be, and I knew that meant going to Top Gun.
When you got there, did it live up to the hype?
There was definitely some hype, but I'll tell you, it was such a place of excellence, a place of expertise, a place of really just true dedication to a craft, and that's what I wanted. I wanted to be the best, and it was evident in everything that was going on at Top Gun that this was the place.
Now, one of the best parts of Top Gun, the original, I mean, other than the volleyball scene, was, of course, the flight scenes. And the sequel does not disappoint. The cast had to train rigorously, doing underwater training, flying in simulators, learning to operate cockpit cameras, and eventually getting up in the air.
Here comes some G's.
During flight training, they would be embarrassed about puking.
Ooh.
I was like, do not be embarrassed about that.
I feel every bit of food I've had in my stomach.
I'm okay.
There's 5 feet.
My mustache fell off.
We're back now with Commander Becky Dowling Calder, talking about her time in the Navy's elite program for fighter pilots.
There was elements of exhaustion. I think anybody that has gone through the program will tell you that. It's a pretty intense school that, you know, tests you both mentally and physically, and both the training in the jet and the training on the ground, it's equally as exhausting. It really does change your outlook on what the mission is, what your job is in the service, and just really what you're called to do.
What felt different in terms of that calling after your time in the program?
Well, I think it sort of goes back to that experience I had on my first deployment. I was asked to do some things to support some troops on the ground that I felt like I wasn't prepared for. And that was something that I knew then that the tactics needed to change. And the only way to do that was through going to Top Gun and becoming one of those tactics instructors. I think that once you go through the course and then you are sort of charged with teaching those tactics to the fleet, not only the young pilots and the new pilots, but also the older ones too. And sometimes that can be even more difficult than teaching the younger generation, because the older generation, the higher level leaders, you know, they've been doing this for a long time, oftentimes longer than you have. And it is your job to make sure that they know how to operate the F-18 in all sorts of scenarios, both in training and in combat, and to make sure they do their job.
You're one of the few pilots to fly every version of the Hornet, and that's a fighter jet that can go faster than the speed of sound. What is that like?
Right. Well, I do feel honored to have flown all the versions. I think that is also a testament to my age and my sort of not giving up. I started my first deployment was in the F-18 Charlie. So that was the Hornet. And then it switched to the Super Hornet. My second deployment was in the Echo. Both the Charlie and the Echo were single seat versions. When I went through Top Gun, I went through in 2004, and they also had some older versions of the Hornet, which we don't even fly anymore. So I got to fly the Alpha, and I got to fly the Bravo. So that's where I flew those older versions, and also the Delta. So that's where those came from. And then the E and the F were the Super Hornet versions, and I flew a majority of those hours in my training officer tour, which was after Top Gun, and in my instructor tour. So I flew a lot of E and F time there.
Okay, you were the first woman pilot to graduate Top Gun. Did it ever feel like you were under a microscope?
There was a few challenges. I think I tried to navigate those, you know, with grace and as best as I could. I think that for anybody who has experienced being, the first or someone who looks different than the majority of people that are in the room, there is definitely an aspect of living under a microscope. So I've had to navigate that throughout the rest of my career, really. You know, I didn't do things perfectly. I tried to do things the best I could. I tried to stay true to myself. And I just tried to do my job. That's what I went to Top Gun for. It was never to be the first. It was to learn that F-18, to fly the F-18 the best that I can. And that's what it was about. I think I've talked about this before. The jet does not care about gender. And that's what I've always sort of leaned back on, that I just need to do my job the best that I can. And hopefully do it well.
What sense of responsibility or connection do you feel with the women who have followed in your legacy?
There is a sense of connection. I think both the connection of just those that have all gone through Top Gun, I think that there is a connection there. And then, of course, for the women that have gone through the program, there has been just a handful, you know, just over 20. I am so proud. I'm both honored and then proud to see this next generation of younger aircrew going through the program, continuing to pursue just the excellence in their craft. And for F-18s, that means going to Top Gun. So I think that I have a lot of both respect, because I know how hard the program is, a respect for those women, because I know how hard it is to be among the few and the only. And that's hard.
Now, there is a little bit of a family thing going on here, though. So you may have been a first, often the only, but you weren't all alone. Your husband's also a Top Gun grad. Is that right?
He is. He went to Top Gun about a year before I did. And so, yeah, we like to joke. We keep it in the family. He's an excellent pilot. He's actually just finishing his Navy career and retiring after 25 years of service. So I'm also not only a pilot, but I'm also a proud military spouse. And some of the last 10 years, I have been, supporting him and his career and loving every minute of that as well.
So I think we got to talk about the movie a little bit, Maverick. And in part because now that I've established you and your husband, then we've got to establish that there are kids. And so much of Maverick is about the kid that then goes off to follow in the father's footsteps or in the parents' footsteps. Any sense that you've got some damn good pilots among your little people?
Yeah, we wanted to see the movie as a family. So we picked our kids up from school early one day last week, and we went to the theater together. And I think the one thing I was not expecting was how emotional the movie was going to make me. I didn't realize, you know, I had seen it. It came out when I was 10 years old, and I had seen it when I was younger, and didn't realize how much it was going to affect my life and become my life. And now as I am, you know, sort of on the other side of that, not flying anymore now as a parent, as a military spouse, it really hit me differently. I think part of it and the aspect of the movie of, you know, the child who grows up without his father, that really hit close to home, both in, you know, having my husband be deployed 8 months a year, the last 3 years, having to say goodbye to him with my children, watching them say goodbye to their dad, and just knowing and praying that that he's doing exactly what he's being called to do, but realizing that some military children don't have their parents and have lost their parents, both at war, in times of peace as well, and in training accidents and training missions, friends of mine, children that I know who are going to grow up without their father. And it just really, really made me emotional. So of all, you know, the on-screen, the flying, it was just absolutely amazing. It was also really emotional.
Mm. Did the flying feel familiar? Was it just so Hollywood that it didn't at all? Or was there at least something in the spirit of it that felt like the flying that you're on the other side of now?
The, you know, what's interesting about that movie and what made me, how it made me reflect on my life is, to me, that life is normal. Flying F-18s, fighting other jets, doing air-to-air combat in training, all of that is normal to me. Watching it on the big screen, sitting there with my children as a spectator, now as a Navy spouse, I realize just how truly not normal that is. And, you know, it took a huge screen and, you know, it's been 30 plus years since, you know, the last Top Gun movie, but I was sitting there just watching and I realized that what I did was pretty special. And I'm excited that my children can see it and that everybody can see it. The flying scenes were incredible. And the air crew who flew those, the Navy pilots who flew those scenes, I mean, they are serving our country today, and they're doing it because they signed up to serve this country. And now everybody gets to see what they do and what they have sacrificed and what they do sacrifice every day for this country.
Are the relationships real? And by relationships, I mean the long-term connections between Maverick and Iceman, between Goose and the son, between Maverick and Goose's son, Rooster. Are those kinds of relationships real?
Those relationships are absolutely real. The connections are real. The people that you go to war with, you become family with, and those are real.
Okay, we're going to finish up with a little speed round here because, you know, speed.
Okay.
So, are you really good at beach volleyball?
No.
Basketball, but not the volleyball. Okay.
Absolutely.
Can the jets really fly that low, that close, and that fast?
Well, they can, but they probably shouldn't.
If you did what Tom Cruise did and went rogue and took an unauthorized fight just to prove that the impossible was possible, what would happen?
I probably wouldn't be flying anymore. But like I said, it's Hollywood and a lot of things can happen in Hollywood.
Charlie or Phoenix?
Phoenix.
Original Top Gun or Maverick?
Ooh, that's a good one. I'm going to go Maverick.
Commander Becky Dowling Calder, the first female pilot to graduate from Top Gun. Thank you so much for being with us.
You are so welcome. Thank you so much for having me.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.